BioInsights podcast.
This episode is called Achieving Better AAV Vector Productivity. I'm Charlotte Barker, and I'm joined today by Diane Golubieski and Marissa Stanvik to talk about upstream vector bioprocessing. As you may already know, transient transfection of plasmids into suspension HEK293 cells is still the most commonly used method for the production of recombinant adeno-associated virus, RAAV, gene therapies, and Diane and Marissa are here to talk about some ways to optimise that process. Diane Golubieski joined Oxford Biomedica Solutions in 2020. She currently leads the Vector Engineering Group, focusing on improving RAAV productivity and product quality through understanding AAV biology and vector design. Prior to joining Oxford Biomedica, Diane was a founding member of Solid Biosciences' RAAV R&D team, where she worked in exploratory biology, preclinical development, and platform development. Marissa Stanvik is the Director of Upstream Process Development at Oxford Biomedica Solutions. Prior to joining Oxford Biomedica, she was process engineer at Momenta Pharmaceuticals and a research scientist at Merck Millipore. She has over 12 years of experience in the biotech industry, focusing on upstream process development, scale-up and tech transfer for AAVs, MABs and biosimilars. Okay, so how important would you say plasmid design is to vector productivity and quality, Diane?
Thanks, Charlotte. That's actually really important. And at Oxford Biomedica Solutions, we actually have an entire team that's focused on vector engineering and plasmid design. And our main goal is to use that to increase vector productivity and drug quality. So our team has worked really hard for the past few years to come up with an ideal arrangement of sequences that is critical to AAV production. And we have generated a novel dual plasmid design that does just that. So in our hands, our design outperforms all other configurations of dual plasmids that we see out there and that we have tested. Our novel dual plasmid system results in a significant increase in AAV productivity out of the bioreactor, but most importantly, it also increases the percent full capsids that we're getting upstream as well. So this dual plasmid design has been a huge innovation to our AAV manufacturing platform process and has led to significant process gain by still maintaining the same flexibility that you would get with a triple plasmid transfection. So I think Marissa can comment a little bit on that when this was transferred to the upstream process development lab and the bioreactors of how important the dual plasmid system is for our platform.
Absolutely. Marissa?
So my team worked very closely with Diane's team to evaluate all of the different designs she spoke to, and the dual plasmid design worked exceptionally in our hands. We tested at multiple different small scale and larger scale bioreactors, and we're really excited to continue to incorporate it as part of our development.
Yeah, and I would say as a bonus, another focus is kind of to decrease the cost of production. So it's kind of nice to only have two plasmids versus three plasmids, because then it reduces the number of GMP plasmids that you'll need in your GMP manufacturing and how many plasmid banking that you need to do and the management of that and the cost overall on the plasmid side. And just to comment a little bit and tell you about our dual plasmid design, it's actually a very simple design. It's a simple alteration where we combine the rep cap and the payload, or the ITR GOI sequence, on the same plasmid. And then the second plasmid is the adenovirus helper plasmid. So it's not any changes to a triple plasmid sequence, which is great because you can then use the same process and platform and analytical tools that you would use in the triple platform in our dual platform. So it requires, you know, very little changes after the plasmid downstream of that all the way through analytics and QC. So it was really a bonus to not have to introduce any new sequences into our plasmid or do any other heavy plasmid engineering to plasmids to incorporate into our platform and make it really plug and play for our partners. So like I said, we really don't need to do much platform development once we convert a triple plasmid into the dual system. And it doesn't really require any changes that you would do later on, but our final drug product is the same at the end. That's for the most important. So if anything, it's better, it's improved. The biggest improvements that we see with our dual plasmid system is upstream. So like I said, out of the bioreactor, we're getting an increase in productivity. So the total vector genomes that you're getting out of the bioreactor, and also an increase of the percentage full. And the reason that's so important is because the more that you give for downstream to purify, the more higher yield that you're getting at the end. So the better product that we can give them upstream, we see that consistently maintained throughout our entire process. So I just want to end with saying that we offer this dual plasmid platform to our partners at Oxford Biomedical Solutions. And really the benefit in our model is that we really incorporate the dual plasmid early on and do manufacturability assessments at the small scale. And our 2 liters, that scales up very well accordingly, which Melissa's going to talk about later. And we really look for these improvements in characterizing the drug quality early on with our partners. And you can find more information on our dual plasmid system at our ASGCT poster that we presented this year back in May.
So Diane, so what were the biggest challenges you found with the design or arrangement of the dual plasmids?
The major concern that we had when we designed this arrangement of sequences of having the rep cap together with the ITR containing payload was, did it increase the chances of possibly generating replication confident AAV in our process? And that's a question that we get asked a lot, but it's good news that we don't. We have tested multiple material that was generated using our dual plasmid system, and we have never detected the presence of replication confident AAV in our platform process.
Brilliant. It sounds like a really exciting development. And so we talked a bit about plasmid design, but what about the RAV sequence? How important is that to vector productivity and quality?
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. It's actually just as critical, if not even more. So the recombinant AAV payload sequence is very important, and also the size that you're trying to deliver as well. So we have people that are interested in trying to fit very large sequences in and very small sequences in. So there is importance to both what you're encoding sequence-wise and the size of it. It's kind of like Goldilocks, I like to think of it. There's like something that's just right in terms of sequence encoding and also size for productivity and quality. So although we see huge improvements with our platform process, there can be very good and very bad sequences that we have a good understanding on that work better or worse. So some examples of some things that can be problematic, so highly structured sequences in the genome, so things like microRNAs or GC-rich regions can lead to a lot of truncations of your drug products, so a lot of partial packaging, a lot of promoters that are very strong promoters or codon optimizations that people are using to make their gene express highly can be problematic as well. So all of these things also not only can impact your productivity, but it also makes characterizing your drug product at the end very difficult too. So a lot of the sequencing methods that you would use to characterize your drug products are more difficult with these things as well. CpG content has been associated with low durability in the clinic and also has the potential to have an immune response in patients. So our advice to potential partners is to evaluate multiple sequence candidates early on. So and look for some of these red flags that you would see for packaging, both in productivity and partials and things like that. So we really are advocate for biology being the main driver for the decision making when someone's nominating a lead for development, but you have to consider the whole package. So maybe if you have two candidates that are comparable wise, expression wise, and efficacy wise, it's really important to look early on is how it manufactures. And so that doesn't lead to problems later on. So we offer these kind of end-to-end services for clients where we help them with support the construct design and look for some of these red flags early on. And we have internally over 40 characterization assays to help us find these problematic things in your drug quality. And we can do that from the small scale to the large scale.
Brilliant. And coming to you, Marissa, after incorporating those plasmid engineering that Diane spoke about, what other areas did you focus on when trying to increase the bioreactor productivity, would you say?
Yes, of course. So we learned a lot about which factors were most important to the final productivity. And importantly, we also learned about what levers we could tune to increase the productivity even further. So when we first set out to increase our bioreactor productivity, one of the first areas we explored was transfection density. Simply, if we increased the number of cells we were transfecting, we were hoping we could increase the amount of final VGs in our bioreactor when we harvested. Typically, we utilize shake flask studies to perform an evaluation for both productivity and transfection efficiency. And we saw that as we increased the density, we saw some increases in productivity, but we also saw decreases in the transfection efficiency. So we knew we would benefit for some additional optimization and development. The transfection solution is absolutely key to this development equation. making any changes to how you prepare or add the solution has a dramatic impact on your final productivity. It's actually quite a sensitive process, so we put a lot of focus on the design of it. When we moved to the dual plasmid system that Diane spoke about and also explored higher cell densities, we took a systematic approach with our shake flask to optimize the amount of DNA we're using, how much transfection reagent was necessary, and what the ratio of the plasmids were to one another. We were able to optimize our platform conditions around the novel design and find a set of parameters that was ideal for multiple constructs moving forward. We also looked into components that could be added to our culture, whether in the media or transfection solution or as feeds, to enhance our transfection efficiency or increase our productivity. We did a bit of a deep dive into the biology of transfection and production and designed a few rounds of additive screening. The most promising additive we found was nearly doubling our productivity, which was incredible. We took that additive and we fine-tuned the concentration and timing to prepare for incorporating it into our platform. And next, we really moved to our 2-liter bioreactor scale. Our 2 liters are our workhorse in our lab. We use them to confirm all of our shake flask results. And after we do that, we move on to optimizing how we operate that bioreactor. Typically, we use DOEs that we execute to assess operating parameters like temperature, dissolved oxygen, pH, agitation. And with this approach, we're able to select our optimum operating parameters moving forward. So we had a handful of ideas and we were ready to combine everything together to assess the final impact on our process. And once we combined all these parameters, we increased our productivity by over a log to nearly 1 E15 VG per liter. That was very exciting when the results came in and the team was incredibly happy about it. However, it wasn't just important that we had one high producing construct. We needed a truly plug and play system. We know the speed that we can develop a product will ultimately dictate how quickly candidates can move from selection to IND submission. So at that end, OXB Solutions, we wanted to ensure our platform would work for a wide variety of constructs and capsid serotypes. So we tested multiple constructs and over 9 different serotypes and saw an average VG productivity of 1E15 VGs per liter across clade A, B, E, and F capsids. It was a great achievement for the lab. As you might imagine, we worked very closely with our downstream and analytical team to ensure the increase in productivity we saw in the bioreactor was present throughout the entire purification process, and also that there were no changes to product quality. So we confirmed this increase, and we also saw an outstanding nearly 50% full capsids in the affinity product as a result of the dual plasmid design that Diane spoke to. Our purification sciences team designed a downstream platform where the final product achieved over 90% fully intact vectors in the drug substance with high product quality. So we continue to test our plug and play upstream platform with a variety of constructs, and we're even developing our next generation platform with even higher cell densities, but that's probably a story for another time.
Absolutely. Watch this space. Sounds like you got some great results there. So what would you say then, if you had to pick one area that's key to focus on for a successful scale-up, what would you say, Marissa?
Great question. Thank you very much, Charlotte, for asking. That was our next step. We had to take the process that we had executed many, many times at the shake flask and 2-liter scale and ensure it was scaled to our 50-liter, 500-liter, and 2,000-liter bioreactors. Transient transfection traditionally has a reputation for poor productivity and scalability. So at OXB Solutions, we really set out to prove that wrong and create a high-performing system that still offers the flexibility of transient transfection with the productivity you might see noted with other systems. And scale-up is a critical piece of that puzzle. There were a few key areas that we focused on. First, we designed a cell expansion strategy because throughout our platform development, we understood how critical cell health was to the productivity of the system. So we made sure we were able to deliver on those standards no matter what scale we were working with. We needed to be able to support the increased cell volume as a result of increasing transfection density, but we also needed to balance our existing equipment. Considering how unpredictable supply chain is, it's really beneficial to be able to design a flexible process. The next area we focused on was ensuring the volume and process timing would be appropriate and consistent among scales, which, as you might imagine, is no easy feat when you're comparing 2 liters to 2,000 liters. So we were able to utilize our shake flask and 2-liter scale to define our desired operating ranges and any limits we wanted to put in place. And then we came up with a few different strategies to evaluate in a scaled down bioreactor model before ultimately deciding what our 2,000 liter scale recommendation was. We worked really closely with the engineering and manufacturing team because we had to make sure we had the appropriate containers and vessels to support any additions to the bioreactor. We also know how sensitive the transfection solution is, so we had to make sure we were getting it into the bioreactor in an appropriate way, which you might imagine is not with a pipette like you would at the shake flask scale. So that was a fun engineering problem. Another major focus as we scaled up to the 2,000 liter bioreactor was looking at our bioreactor control strategy. We knew our cell density was higher, which means we had to make sure our gas control strategy and mass flow controllers would be able to keep up with the increased gas demand. Based on all of our previous industry experience working at larger scales, we also knew there might be some expected differences in things like the pH or the pCO2 profile based on differences in a larger bioreactor with gas transfer or CO2 stripping. But ultimately, it was our goal to make sure if there were any changes, that they wouldn't affect the final amount or quality of the product. And finally, we put together a comprehensive satellite bioreactor strategy that assessed all of the critical process steps in the entire production process. We wanted to make sure that in the event we had to understand any differences among scales, we could pinpoint why the difference happened. When we went to execute the 2,000 liter platform run, it was all hands on deck. It was very high profile and we had a lot of visitors in lab. It was a huge team effort from the PD, manufacturing, engineering, facilities, procurement, so many teams within Oxford Biomedica Solutions. And it felt incredible when we ultimately added the lysis buffer to the bioreactor and submitted our final sample to analytics to see how all of the preparation and planning had worked out. And truly, it was such a great example of what our goal was with the OXB Solutions platform. We were confident that if we spent the time building up our platform, we would be successful in operating it, and we can really offer those end-to-end services for our partners at Oxford Biomedica Solutions. From construct and plasmid design that Diane spoke to the upstream development and downstream development that goes on, all the way to manufacturing, we can develop a highly productive process with high product quality. We've shown time after time that we can scale our process from 2 liters to the 500 liter and 2000 scale. And we're so proud of the accomplishments we've made in the upstream team with the dual plasmid design and the bioreactor productivity increases to ultimately achieve greater than 1E15 VG per liter. And we're very excited to work with more partners to showcase these abilities.
Thank you very much, Diane and Marissa, for sharing your insights with us today. This episode was brought to you in partnership with Oxford Biomedica Solutions. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to subscribe to the BioInsights podcast.